what you want. We got a mighty hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games, and you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and all Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too, and you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews, and you know from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too?
Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection Bowl Preview number two. Jeremy Moss here, not with Chris Andres. Those who were clamoring to know if he was back, he's not. But we always have the reliable Matthew Kennerly joining us this evening.
Into the breach.
Yes. Finish for finals, so you can kind of smooth sail it for next month. Relax. Take a break.
Yes, I can.
I'm assuming we're not going to talk about Fresno bowl game tonight, but I assume you're not going to the Hawaii Bowl this year?
No, I'm afraid my saving account is a little low for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's if you can get there, great, but you went to the Las Vegas Bowl last year. That's more feasible. Driving or flying to Las Vegas is not too bad.
No, it's not.
All right, but this is the MWCConnection.com. Check us out there. Facebook, Mountains Connection. We're up to 1,200 likes. That's pretty good.
Yeah, thumbs up for that.
And Twitter, MWC Connection. And tonight, if you noticed yesterday's or previous show, I don't know when you're listening to this, I'll probably end up combining the two shows into one feed as well. But if you missed our other show, we discussed Louisiana Lafayette versus Nevada, and that's the New Orleans Bowl. And then we also discussed, oh, geez, we had a guest on, New Mexico Bowl, UTEP versus Utah State. So if you haven't listened to that, go listen to that both games weekend, because I don't like – what's your thought? We'll bring our guest on a moment to talk Colorado State, Utah, and the Vegas Bowl. But what's your thoughts about having four bowl games on the first Saturday? I hate it.
Well, you know what, though? Like you said, I was in Vegas last year, and I loved it because I was able to put money down and, you know, kind of give it away to the Hard Rock Hotel. So that was cool.
Well, of course, but I guess I could complain, but it's also like that's a normal Saturday for us through most of the year, at least.
Yeah,
for me.
Exactly. It's one more Saturday that everybody across the nation is going to get to enjoy.
Yeah,
The Mountain West is going to get its best time to shine.
Yeah, we got some good games. Yeah, the Lafayette Nevada game.
Okay, well, I don't know if that was just me or Jeremy had his feed freak out again. So I guess I will pick up the slack until he gets back. Normally, I have Chris to lean on in a situation like this, but all right. Well, I guess I can, you know, catch everybody up to speed until Jeremy gets back. Are you there?
Yeah. So I should have warned you before we started recording. This happened last night, and the weird thing is, I'm actually using a different computer tonight.
Oh, okay.
I am. Maybe it's Firefox. So if I do drop off, just continue talking, because the weird thing is you'll still see me in there.
Okay.
But well, my monitor won't work, my little thing. Because if you actually watch the video of our show the other day, Chris, I just stayed on to let him wrap up the show. I'm like waving my hands, freaking out in the little box in the corner. After, and I guessed, take control. So I will leave my Google Plus page open to get back quickly, but – and you have the chat. We're talking business. You have the chat up too, so I can chat you stuff. Is that correct?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So do you see my message that says hi right now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, we'll use that. I can still use that, but yeah. Let's get to the bowl games. Here's our guest tonight. We have, since we have the we'll give the official sponsor, I guess, to Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl. We're not getting any money or dollars from it, but that's what it's really called. But we're going to bring on Shane Roberts from BlockU.com to discuss Utah. That's cool. Most people know I'm familiar with a little bit, those Utes. And what's your first thought? Well, I bring him on because I'm inviting him now. What's your first thoughts on that game?
Well, I guess I'm surprised that Utah didn't end up in a better bowl considering the thrashing they gave Fresno State earlier this year. I think you would know better than I would exactly what happened with the Utes after that first game.
They have a guy named Nate Orchard who's All-American, going to be paid very handsomely soon. I think he broke some sort of sack record in the Mountain. We'll ask Shane for sure. I know he gets the quarterback as much as he wants, and most people should be familiar with anyways, Utah's defense is always pretty good. And as you can attest to that when they played, and they put up a lot of points against Fresno.
Yeah, but did they have some like quarterback issues? Like did Travis Wilson not stay healthy or something like that?
That was a good possibility, but no, they switched around between him and Kendall Thompson, but Kendall Thompson got hurt. He's the Oklahoma transfer. Mm-hmm. He came in versus Michigan, looked terrible, even though they still won. He played part of another game. They kind of rotated a little bit, but it's Travis Wilson's job, especially with Kendall Thompson going down. And the thing is, their offense, besides Devontae Booker, their running back, is good. Their quarterback, Travis Wilson, looks like a giraffe. Looks like Keanu Reeves from Point Break, if you want to look at it that way. He's iffy. That's the biggest question mark. And they're ranked, so, but he's iffy. And you saw him play. They weren't – well, Fresno first month wasn't very good, so I can't really say to go by that. But they could put up some points if they really want to running the ball, but I saw enough of their games. They don't score a lot of points at Oregon State. Overtime, barely beat Michigan, who's not very good. So they're ranked because of their defense, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be exciting, I think, to see what, you know, Colorado State's running game can do against this front seven.
Definitely, yeah, because that's the big deal. Because we know, here's one thing, too, and I know Sinche gets on if he gets my invite or not, if it works. But Utah likes to run just single coverage on the outside for wide receivers. And I think the Rams have a pretty good receiver in their own right, Rashard Higgins. So,
what, first team consensus All-American across the board? I'd say so.
I think so. He did get first team on pretty much everything?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. He was Blitnikoff finalist, him and Amari Cooper. But, yeah, Utah's defense is so good. They like to do – their main thing is they'll get pressure and they'll just do one-on-one on the outside. They rarely do zone. They rarely do any sort of other coverage like that, but that'll be an interesting matchup. And we do, I believe, Shane, are you with us?
Yep, I am.
Excellent, it works. Sometimes Google Plus, my invites can be temperamental.
Yeah, we've experienced that ourselves.
Yeah, and then also, we got Matt Kennerly with us tonight as well, but we recorded last night. Everybody's already heard it, but I may just randomly drop off and Matt might take over, but yet I'll still hear everything, so that'll be an interesting thing. But we got Shane here from BlockU.com. Talking to Utah, Colorado State, a ranked Utah team. So first off, everybody knows me. I follow the Utes, went to Utah, all sorts of stuff. It's just kind of weird my situation a little bit. But let's get a big picture. What did you think of their season by being ranked and getting probably almost double the amount of wins people thought they would?
Well, I actually had them. I picked them at 7 wins before the season.
Well, you're a homer, so come on.
Well, I mean, there's some fairness in that. I'm a grad. I'm a season ticket holder, so yeah. But naturally. Yeah, I had them at 7 wins. I kind of figured with all the close games they had last year, they lost so many games by one possession, by a field goal or an overtime, that eventually the averages would have to swing at some point. Just because they've been so close for so long, and I figured, you know, health would eventually kind of take over and some teams would fall off. You know, only so many teams can be so good for so long. So they exceeded my expectation by about a game. They won some games I didn't expect them to. I kind of thought they might get USC, but I wasn't sure. Beating UCLA down in the Rose Bowl, I didn't pick that one. Preseason, I didn't anyways. So, I mean, big picture wise, the program's headed in the right direction. They're pulling in, you know, a lot of great, you know, young talent. I mean, this team, as good as they are this year, especially, you know, if you kind of really step back, if they would have found a way to, you know, either really just beat Arizona State in overtime or, not let the collapse happen against Arizona, they might have been in one of these January bowl games as well.
Or Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State. Yeah. That one's tough, though, because they weren't a ranked opponent, but the other two were top 15. But, yeah, Washington State, there's no doubt about those guys. That one was frustrating. But as I was saying, this team's very young. Most of the team will be back next year, and they're building towards something really cool and something really special, and we're having a lot of fun with the progress that's happening, transitioning from the Mountain West to the Pac-12.
How have the Utes been able to kind of make up for some of the injuries that they've had this season? Because I obviously my biggest exposure was their beatdown of Fresno State early in the season.
Yeah.
But looking at the depth chart right now, I noticed that guys like Junior Salt have been demoted off the offensive line. Drez Anderson's been injured. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you would know better than I would about how have they kind of rolled with those punches that are inevitably going to come to any team.
Yeah, well, this talent they've been recruiting since joining the Pac-12 is finally starting to develop and to come to fruition. They had some pretty major transfers coming into the program in the preseason. Obviously, you mentioned Drez; he went down. But Kenneth Scott, he's been here this season, but he was out all of last season. I think that's kind of one name people kind of forget about. Obviously, Devontae Booker, he was a JC transfer. He was a huge addition. Tim Patrick, he got hurt against Oregon with a pretty nasty break in his leg, but he was a really nice addition up to that point. It's just a lot of this talent and depth has finally started to kind of come around. They got a lot of kids on defense in the secondary in particular. Most of the corners and a couple of safeties are either true freshmen or true sophomores, a couple from Florida. Dennis Erickson's opened up the Florida pipeline for Utah in a big way. So a lot of those kids are really starting to come in and contribute. So it's just all about developing depth, and that's what we learned the first couple of years in this conference is, the frontline guys are really good, but once you start losing those guys, our first couple of years of Jordan Wynn, who was a really good quarterback, but as soon as he went down, there was nothing there. In this conference, you have to have depth to survive, and that depth's finally starting to come around, and defensively, it's really been there almost the entire time, but offensively, they're finally starting to get the skilled players in that they've been needing, specifically a wide receiver. Offensive line, they have I know at one point they had 17 offensive linemen on scholarship because they went heavy on that their first couple years in the conference, and those guys are really starting to come around. Obviously, you mentioned Junior Salt. Junior Salt's been shaken up a little bit on and off throughout the season, but they have a really nice group of probably about 8-9 guys there that kind of rotate in or out that's fairly interchangeable. They just finally have got this depth to make it to where, okay, we can survive an injury or two and not go into the tank. And that's a big, big addition to this program.
Okay. I'll ask you this question. You kind of mentioned quarterbacks and all that stuff. Watching Utes enough play this year, their offense outside of Booker, I'm going to say it, they're terrible. They're 12th in the Pac-12 in total offense. Losing Drez Anderson clearly doesn't help. But again, Kenneth Scott is pretty good, and I've seen Travis Wilson enough to know that has his issues on his own. What is it? What do they have to do offensively? Because the Rams' defense, it's okay. It's not like anything amazing by any sorts of means. They'll make some plays here and there, but what are they going to do offensively? Just run Booker the entire game?
No, that's the kind of the frustrating thing I think to a lot of us Ute fans is. Obviously, as a collective unit, it hasn't quite come together. We'll see flashes from time to time. But individually, there's a lot of talent on this offensive staff. Kenneth Scott, I think, is the best wide receiver on the entire team because he has the combination of speed, size. He has amazing hands. He catches almost everything within his vicinity.
He's not Drez Anderson who drops the ball all the time, right?
Exactly. Drez was the most frustrating individual out there. You'll see a touchdown like what he caught against UCLA between two guys juggling the ball and come down. And you're like, how the hell does he catch that when on a simple slant route for a first down, he'll tip the ball to the defender. It's completely maddening. But, you know, obviously you mentioned Booker. He's a stud. But Scott, there's Wesley Tonga, which is a great tight end. And we'll see him flash up from time to time. Kalen Clay. Obviously, everybody thinks of the Oregon debacle of what happened with him. But he got behind. He had 150 yards against Oregon. He got behind Colorado a few times, which everybody gets behind Colorado. He'd beat Arizona a couple times. So there's a lot of individual weapons. I think Dave Christensen has had a hard time kind of figuring out how to best put these weapons into place. Dave Christensen being the offensive coordinator and really utilize these guys, because there's a lot of skill there, but he's had a hard time kind of snapping the puzzle into place. You can tell he really wants to have a true dual threat quarterback, and that's not really Travis Wilson's strength. Travis Wilson's a bit of a gunner. You kind of have to let him chuck the ball down the field a little bit, good and bad, to really let him be successful. So it's really kind of a Dave Christensen figuring out the balance between making sure there aren't a lot of turnovers, like what we saw last year, as well as obviously getting first downs and moving the chains. And we kind of saw a glimpse of what he'd like to do in the first series against Oregon, the first couple series, when he had Kendall Thompson out there running a true triple option, which is something we haven't seen in quite a long time, and was rather effective against the Ducks. But then obviously Kendall goes down with the torn ACL. Travis comes back in, and I'm a huge Travis Wilson fan. I think he's gotten a raw deal in a lot of cases. But he hasn't quite developed how I'd like to see. And maybe that's on him. Maybe that's on the coaches. It's probably a bit of both. But that's really kind of the big thing is how does Dave Christensen take this quarterback and utilize these weapons? Because if you sleep on these guys, yeah, Booker will be hitting the tackle and between the tackles and between the guards all game long, and then they'll take Kalen Clay over the top on you. Dude runs a 4.340. He's one of the fastest youths to ever step on campus, and that's saying something. So if they sleep on one of these wide receivers, they'll get behind him, as we saw against Oregon, and score a couple of touchdowns.
All right, so Utah on defense, they led the nation in sacks. And a big part of that was a guy that we talked about briefly before we patched in, was Nate Orchard.
Yeah.
He's an All-American. He's going to play on Sundays. But what I want to point out is that, Colorado State's got a guy who's been getting a lot of late buzz as a potential first-round sleeper in tackle Ty Sambrello. So what I want to know is, how are the Utes going to utilize Orchard? Are they going to put him head-to-head with Sambrello, or are they going to move him across the line, to take on the other tackle, Sam Carlson? How do you see that particular matchup playing out?
A couple different ways. Orchard's not really – they're not scared to match up Orchard against anybody. He was actually voted today the fellow offensive lineman in the Pac-12 as the best defensive lineman in the Pac-12. It's a really cool award called the Morris Trophy. So the offensive lineman vote for the best defensive lineman, and the same vice versa, and they voted Nate Orchard as the best. And so they're not scared to match him up with anybody. He has a unique combination of size and speed and strength that they just line him up and say, if you can stop him, great. If not, we'll tip our hat to you. But they'll move him around a little bit. They're not scared to line him up as an outside linebacker and get him up, in a two-point stance and move him around. But see, the Orchard thing, he has a lot of help along that front line. Hunter Dimmick on the other side of the defensive line has double-digit sacks. He has about 10 or 11 sacks himself. So he has kind of a bookend on the other side that's almost as productive and is a sophomore. And there's also Lotulele, Mostari Lotulele's younger brother, and maybe even better than, according to a lot of coaches, might be better than Star. Lowell was tearing it up in the last half of the season. He's a little bit more of a pass rusher than Star was. Star was a lot more of a run stuffer. So it's kind of Nate gets a lot of the sacks, and he gets a lot of the accolades, but it's truly a sack by committee, really. And that's, we kind of coined this term here in Salt Lake called Sack Lake City. Not just because of Nate. We call Nate the mayor of Sack Lake City, but it's really, they're coming from both ends. They're going to push a nose guard after you. And when you're kind of fall asleep on, you know, the secondary, they'll bring a corner off the blitz and take you from there. So it's not just Nate Orchard. I know they're not going to really scheme Nate against anybody in particular. They're just going to put him wherever they want and find the best place to really kind of, you know, collapse that pocket.
All right. So I got a question too, because I know Utah likes to do single coverage. They don't do too much zone or any sort of in the defensive backfield. Who's going to match up with Rashard Higgins, or what's the plan? Is a Kalani Sitake just going to keep his corners on the same corner, whatever they play, the
press man,
press or boundary corner guys, thinking of the same word twice. Mm-hmm. Are they just going to stick to the normal game plan? Whoever plays the one side will play that side. Whoever plays the other side, they'll guard whoever, whether it's Rashard Higgins or if it's Joe Hanzler. Are they going to stick anybody particular on Higgins? Because he is one of the best receivers in the country.
If you talk to Coach Sitake or Coach Whittingham, they say we do what we do, and that's play press man, and we're not shy about it. We got to get to the quarterback. And obviously that's kind of the first step, but you'll see probably Eric Rowe, lining up against, Higgins quite a bit, probably for most of the game. This is his first year at corner. He's been a safety the previous 3 years. He is a freshman All-American at safety. He had some growing pains at times this year. Some U fans kind of hated on him, but I think that's just because the system Utah runs defensively. If you get burned, it's pretty obvious, but he did a nice job against Nelson Aguilar, from USC. Just all these wide receivers that Utah went up against this year, very few of them, if any of them, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, had a big day. And Rowe is a big part of that. You also see Dominique Hatfield, probably cover him from time to time, depending on which package they're running at a time, whether it's nickel or whether it's dime or whether they switch to maybe even a zone in some cases. Domo has turned into quite a little superstar in his own right, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see some bracket coverage either. Utah wants to take away your best player, and if Higgins is that best player, obviously, D. Hart in the backfield is something they're going to have to, you know, keep an eye on. But they're going to take a look at Higgins and say, okay, we're going to put Rowe, we're going to put Dominic Hatfield on you, and then over the top, we're going to have a safety sitting over there keeping an eye on him as well. And, you know, like a Brian Blecken or Marcus Williams, who's a true freshman. So they'll be well aware of where he is, and they'll put one corner on him, and then they'll have – probably a safety keeping an eye on him as well.
All right. So, you know, I assume a lot of people aren't going to bring this up, but one thing that I've noticed just looking at the numbers is that it seems like Utah is going to have a huge edge on special teams. I know Tom Hackett had, you know, he won the Ray Guy Award the other day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It'd have been a crime against humanity if he didn't.
But Andy Phillips may have had the best year out of any kicker in the Pac-12. So, you know, how do you think that's going to factor into this game?
Utah, I would say without a doubt, probably has the best special teams in the country, in both kicking, place kicking, punting, and return guy. Obviously, Hackett can flip a field like I've never seen before. And he does it directionally, too, to where the return guy usually doesn't have a chance, and it will, you know, dribble down to the 5-yard line. He's gutsy too. He holds onto the ball for an extra second or two to let his guys get down the field. So that's a huge advantage. There's really nowhere on the field to where if Utah goes 3-and-out to where you say, you know, they better get a good punt here because the chances are they will and the field will get flipped. Andy Phillips. We call him Automatic Andy here in Salt Lake. He missed a couple, you know, painful kicks against Arizona State, but you know, that happens from time to time, so we didn't kill him for it. But Andy's been nails, and he has range too. He'll go from 50 yards plus pretty normally on almost any occasion. And then he's also he's really good at onside kicks too. Every time he's attempted an onside kick, they've recovered it. Utah State last year, UCLA this year. And he's not scared to hit anybody either. He'll go down there and just absolutely knock somebody out. He's about as mean a kicker as there is. And then You look at Kalen Clay. He has 3 punt returns for a touchdown and 1 kick return for a touchdown. And he probably should have had a 4th punt return for a touchdown against Arizona, but
Oregon.
Well, Oregon was receiving.
I forgot that was. It was just a long touchdown. That's right.
Yeah. Arizona, he busted loose and got into the end zone and would have changed the complexion of that game, but kind of a questionable holding call called that back. So he alone is a weapon that people have to account for as well. So special teams, Utah goes into almost any game as a lock to really have an advantage there. And I can't think of any country or any team in the country that comes close. In all 3 phases, there might be 1 in place kicking and 1 in returning, but in all 3 phases, Utah's pretty tough to beat there.
Yeah, the special teams is, they do it all. They're not many as all 3. A couple do some pretty good, but everyone that's, seeing Kalen Clay do all that stuff and Hackett holding the ball to the last second. And like, oh, let me get my guys down there to tackle him the second he catches the ball. But
punters are people too.
Yeah, of course, yes. Yeah. And we know Scott Harding from Hawaii here does kind of a similar type of deal, kind of hold it and wait and then do some kick down the field and do a line drive that goes about 8 feet off the ground and goes right over everybody's head and it gets there. But the last thing before we let you go here, how do you see, like, kind of give us some sort of prediction? How do you see this game maybe playing out for, like, winner or whatever you want to go with?
Oh, man. It's funny. Obviously, it's hard for us Utah fans because we come from the Mountain West Conference. We are one of the founding members of that conference. And many of us are still, big fans of that conference in a lot of ways. So this is an interesting situation for us because we are now the power team against the Mountain West. So we're supposed to win. If we don't win, then why did we lose? We shouldn't have lost to Colorado State. There's so many interesting things going on here. And when we would go into these games going against a Power 5 conference team or Power 6 back then when there was the Big East,
Big East,
everybody kind of figured, this is the one game to get up for and this, that, and the other. And the other team's going to overlook, little Utah from the Mountain West. So it's very interesting because now the coaches have both sides of this being both the favorite as well as being the underdog in the smaller conference. So it's hard for a lot of us fans because we don't want to say, oh, we're Pac-12. We're just going to walk here and there and roll. But at the same time, Utah has a lot – now 4 years in, Utah now has a lot deeper roster than Colorado State. Obviously, Colorado State's got some studs. Higgins, D. Hart. I'm spacing on the quarterback's name right now. He had a great year being the offensive MVP in the Mountain West. So they've put together quite a roster. But I still see Utah pulling away probably in the 4th quarter. I don't think it's a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. But I think when you factor in Utah's just blood in the water, get after you defense, and then I think Devontae Booker is just going to be a little bit too much for Colorado State. I saw just looking over Colorado State's losses. Obviously, they gave up 200 yards to Jay Ajayi, who's a very good running back. I think Devontae's better. I also think Devontae has a better offensive line. There was a stat that was tweeted out the other day that said Devontae Booker has about 800 yards of rushing after contact, and that's about 100-something yards more than the second best running back in the Pac-12. So he alone should keep Utah at least in the game. And Utah's coaches, they prepare for bowl games better than any other coaches in the country. And with them not being in the bowl game for a couple of years, these guys are going to be salivating to get down to Vegas. And I think it's a big thing, too, with Dave Baldwin taking over as the interim head coach. How does he handle the in-game adjustments? If Utah pulls out some kind of exotic defensive look, can he handle the changes mid-game as a head coach? I think that's a big advantage for Utah as well as the coaching staff going into this game with Jim McElwain being gone. So I see Utah winning. The score I kind of keep floating around is about 38-28. Kind of a good 10-point win there. Maybe getting a touchdown late to really kind of put it away. But I just see Utah as the better team in all three. I don't want to say all three phases, but at minimum two of the three phases. But it should be a fun game. I'm excited. Saturday's going to be awesome because we play Colorado State in the bowl game early in the day. Then we play UNLV later that night. So it's kind of a reunion tour. It's pretty, pretty cool. I'm excited. I miss the old Mountain West guys.
Yeah, it'll be good. Yeah, I agree, too. The McElwain thing being gone, that's a big issue. But Baldwin offense, he'll, I think it'll be go as according to the plan. But with Satake and Witt, what they're going to do, maybe they may mix something up on the third possession or something just to screw with them.
Yeah, that'll be something out that nobody has ever seen before, and it will be crazy.
That'll be – I do think overall the Rams offense is more balanced and a little bit better than Utah overall. I say Booker is still the best player probably on the running the game, but overall I'd give the Rams the edge just because they can run and pass. They actually have a quarterback who could throw the ball consistently good, but – yeah, we got another guy coming on, so I don't want to run you off. But thank you, Shane, for hopping on with us. Check him out at blockyou.com. They have previews. I know he already hates ESPN more because they predict the Rams to win today. I saw that earlier today, so that will be – I think you're right. I think 38 might be a bit too much, but I think whoever's going to win, like you said, it'll be like in single digits, I think. But we'll me and Matt will go over our predictions a bit later. But it'll be a close one regardless, I think.
Yeah,
but
it'll be fun.
Yeah, but thanks for hopping on, and yeah, good luck this weekend. We'll see what happens, man.
All right, thanks, fellas.
All right, thanks, Anshia. All right, so again, that was our guy Shane from BlockU.com. Good stuff, man. Excellent stuff to know about the Utes from a guy who knows the Utes, right?
Yeah, I thought so.
That's the best way to put it. I'm inviting our other guy to hop on for talk about.
Okay, well, presumably he's still inviting our other guy. But yeah, thanks again to Shane for hopping on with us. You know, one other thing that I want to point out about the Utes, unless Jeremy, you're back, or maybe not. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this game. I think that.
Hello.
Yes.
I dropped as soon as I said inviting the other guy. Lovely.
I'm starting to realize I'm not as good on my feet as Chris is.
No, you're fine, but this is the first time it happened. Like, it happened yesterday, but that's it. Like, I don't know what the deal is. It could be – are you using Firefox? What browser are you using?
I use Google Chrome.
I should, but it causes issues on my computer sometimes. But I'm like, I'm switching computers today. I'm going this route. I'm going to do this, but no.
Yeah, rumor has it that Google products don't play nice with –
especially Firefox. And I actually have to – we're going to get another guy on, but I actually have to – can you take over for a minute or two? Since we're live at the moment, talk about whatever you want to talk about, okay? I'll mute myself for a minute.
Okay. Well, I guess I can catch everybody up on other kind of Mountain West news. Jeremy told me before we went on the air that Fresno State's Chris Olsen was named as a freshman All-American by Sporting News, so good for him. I thought for sure it might have been Malcolm Washington because he kind of stepped into the void about halfway through the year and made a pretty good impression. I don't really know what else to say at this point. I guess I could talk
about... We're back. I'm here now. Sorry about that. There was an unexpected visitor to my house.
I'm not used to taking the reins, man.
We're good. Everybody here, we got our guest on, I believe, right? Our other guest?
I don't know. Do we?
Brandon, are you there? I see somebody there.
I see an icon, but I hear silence.
Well, let's see here. Hello? I'm back. Brandon, do we have you?
All right. Sorry about that.
No, it's funny. I said to mute myself for 2 minutes before because somebody came to my house and my dogs went crazy. So... this show will not be our best show because I'm using Firefox and it's not working nice with Google Chrome tonight or Google Hangout. So,
I tried using my phone and it didn't work. So,
no, that's okay. We're good. We got you on Western Michigan guru from hustlebelt.com against Air Force. So, let's just get going. I know their coach is pretty cool. He was on Jim Rome about a week ago. Energetic guy, wants to get the job done, but give us a big picture of Western Michigan.
Well, I mean, PJ Fleck really came in with a lot of hype from himself last season. Obviously, not a lot of success during the season. The gimmicks got old really quick in a 1-11 season, but the big recruiting class last year and then the huge jump, 7 wins this year, and you really start to see what he's able to put together. That recruiting class was actually led by 2 players that aren't even on the team and a 3rd that's got redshirted. And those 3 would be Jay Harris, who left Western Michigan to go into a rap career. No joke. Lonnie Johnson, sorry. Lonnie Johnson was academically ineligible. They both had offers from Big Ten schools in Michigan State and Ohio State, respectively. And then you have Chance Stewart, who also had who was committed to Wisconsin before Brett Bielema went to Arkansas, and then he's been redshirted all season. So this recruiting class, you see Jarvion Franklin perform well on the field, but he wasn't, even remotely in the big picture when you're talking that recruiting class. And now it looks like he's putting it together or putting another one together for the 2015 class. And in, I guess you really just start to see that everyone's buying into his system, and he seems to be all in on Western. He just signed a 6-year extension, which after just 2 years is promising. Obviously anything can happen at the mid-major level, but he seems to be really bought in almost like a Chris Peterson here at Western Michigan.
All right. So, Air Force has the big improvement besides in the win column for Air Force this year was, putting together a bend but don't break defense. But just kind of looking at Western Michigan, what they've really made their bones on this year, it looks like they've been one of the more efficient passing offenses in the country. They're tied for 2nd in yards per attempt. I think they're like 5th in quarterback rating. So tell us a little bit about Zach Terrell, because I'm interested in hearing, how he's progressed throughout the season.
He's really benefited from last season. Obviously, it was rough. He was a redshirt freshman, and he really didn't have that much to work with. He had Corey Davis, and obviously you see what Corey Davis has done this year, putting together another stellar season. First team All-MAC. I think he's the best receiver in the MAC, and that includes his older brother, Titus, who is a senior at Central Michigan. So when you have a player like Corey Davis who's able to catch passes, it's really nice. But Terrell, specifically, he doesn't have the arm strength, but he's a really good game manager. When you have the run game that he does, and then you have the receivers that he does in Davis and Braverman, he'll miss some passes down the field, but his accuracy has gotten better, and it's to the point where he doesn't need to make spectacular plays. He's able to find the 2nd and 3rd read this season and actually make the checkdowns if he needs to. And I think what we're really seeing is just him settling into a role where he doesn't have to win games. He just has to manage it and let his defense come up, which, I mean, no Western team in recent memory has had a decent run game. So to have that also, it's just something you don't expect out of Western Michigan teams, especially coming from the Bill Cuba era.
So stick with that side of the ball. Air Force's defensive, they've improved just as much as their overall team. This is probably the best defense in a decade since they had Tim DeRuiter as their defensive coordinator a while back when he was there. And they got a guy named who has a pretty good name in Weston Stillhammer.
Yeah.
He seems to get interceptions, make big plays for what he does. So, like, what type of – I know they like to throw the ball a lot, but, like, the way the Air Force plays, they got all the small guys, so they have speed on the front, even though they're – because the restrictions, well, I think you can only be about 6'2", 250, that about range. So they'll have the speed, and they might be able to get past some of the tackles up front. But what do you kind of expect – how do they kind of would counter that? Just go as normal, just run them over? What do they kind of want – anything different they would probably do against the more unique defenses, probably a bit quicker than what they normally see?
Well, I don't think Western has all that much size and strength. They are still young. So I almost think Western matches up better. Jarvion Franklin, he likes to run people over. So when you tell me that there's smaller players on defense, my ears just perk up, and I'm sure his do too, especially since he's played his last two games with a bum ankle that he hurt against Eastern Michigan of all teams when we don't really need him. But I also, do think you won't see as much Daniel Braverman. He's the speed threat for Western. He burned Idaho really bad.
But that's Idaho. Come on. That's Idaho.
Well, still, he left them in the dust. But you might see a lot of Corey Davis, and that's just scary because what he's able to do is – oh. When he is on, and that's often, and he gets the ball, it's he can tear teams up like nobody's business. Yeah, I expect Western to just stick with, what they know, a solid pro-style offense of pass, or run, pass every now and then. And I don't know, I almost just see them like a Detroit Lions, but with a better run game. But on obviously different levels.
Yeah.
All right. So, the other big improvement that Air Force has made this year, obviously they're a triple option team.
Mm-hmm.
Cale Pearson took a really big step forward as a passer. And a lot of that has to do with the pair of receivers that Air Force has in Garrett Brown and Jalen Robinette. So I'm curious about how Western stacks up against those pair of receivers.
I think the defensive secondary is the most experienced unit of this Western Michigan team. You have Donald Salascar, who's a senior. You have Justin Curry, who's a senior. They both have led the team. They've led the defense really when they needed to. And Salascar has stepped up lately. He had a slightly rough start to the beginning of the year. He got burned a couple of times when he probably shouldn't have. And then we also saw the emergence of Ronald Zamore on the other side of the field from Salascar. So I really like the secondary being able to match up with an occasional pass offense where they don't have to do too much, but they can make the plays if they need to. What I really like from the Western Michigan defense, though, that I haven't seen in my lifetime, in all honesty, is a solid run defense from the Western Michigan Broncos, which, again, I don't think anyone's seen since the turn of the century when you had players like Robert Sanford leading the Broncos to MAC championship games against the super-duper Marshall teams of the late 90s, early millennium. So you really, it'll be interesting to see how this young run defense plays in their 13th game of the year and then in high altitude at Idaho. But this is arguably one of the best run defenses Western Michigan has produced in some time, indefinitely, I think, since before Bill Cuba was coach.
So with that run defense, because we know the Falcons, it's not their traditional running attack. They don't have Jacoby Owens, who's their star runner, who's going to – I just double-checked that as depth chart. He's not – he's still injured, so he's out. So that's a little break for Western Michigan, in my opinion. How will the – you get a couple weeks to prepare, which is more than week to week when you're playing this triple option or this run-based attack. How do you think they'll handle this just unique style of running attack that they'll be facing?
I think they'll definitely need a bit to settle into it. We've seen that a couple times this year where Western Michigan has had some slow starts, but they have made the adjustments. I think some of the younger players might lose their assignments, and that's going to be the key if they can keep their defensive assignments, which when you have an option offense, that's how you have to defend it. You can't really sell out against any one player or else – the fullback will go 80 yards and touched. So I think we'll see a big play every now and then just, from youth mistakes. And it is only, I think, 2 weeks to knowingly prepare for Air Force and 1 week to get healthy before that, which was the MAC championship weekend. It's tough to say that they'll play well because the triple option is what it is. But I do like how Western Michigan matches up in terms of they aren't that strong, but they make the plays that they need to. They're sound as a unit. So I really do like how they should be able to defend the Air Force offense.
All right. So I'll ask you a similar kind of question that I asked our last guest, because I like talking about special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, obviously Air Force had, its place kicker, Will Conant, was first team in the conference. And, I mean, it doesn't appear that the Broncos had that same kind of benefit, but, you know, Andrew Haldeman was 13 of 16 on the year. And, you know, the punter, I believe, was second in the conference. I'm trying to find the tab I just had open, and I can't. But, he was second in the conference in average yards per punt. Schroeder?
Yep.
So I guess the question to you is, you know, if the game is close late, how comfortable are you with Western Michigan's special teams this year?
Not at all. and there's a reason behind that. I will start out and say that Jay Schroeder, the letter J, not the word, the letter, Jay Schroeder, he's a very solid punter. He's usually consistent, and it's shown by his stats. However, when we turn to Haldeman, you see the 13 for 16 kicking field goals. That doesn't tell the whole story. I think he's missed four PATs this year, including one in overtime against Toledo, which ended the game to finish 20 and yeah, in a 2019 loss in overtime. But obviously that also kickstarted a six-game win streak in the MAC that gave him a chance to win the West heading into the last week of the season. So if it does come down to a Haldeman kick, I don't know. I've seen him make a 52-yarder against Ball State to send a game into overtime. And then, like I said, this year, you know, 2 years after that same kick, I watch him doink one off the upright and miss two field goals earlier in that game from under 30 yards out. So, it's – which Andrew Haldeman shows up and – I think given his rocky season, you can't really put too much faith into him, but he has made his kicks lately.
All right. With that, let's kind of move on to wrap this up. I assume you guys can still hear me. My monitor's going up and down, so I guess that's a yes. What do you kind of prediction? How do you see this game playing out? Because Western Michigan, they – come from the MAC title game. Obviously, a good team. The turnaround's been tremendous. Same as Air Force. I think they both had this plus seven wins, I believe. But what's kind of your thoughts on how this game will play out, and what's your prediction, or at least kind of a whatever quasi prediction or your feel for the game?
How I kind of hope or wish it will go.
Sure, yeah, go whatever you want to say. How it will go, how you're hoping it will go, best case scenario.
I'll give you both. Well, best case, Western blows them out, but I don't think that'll happen either way. I think Western does give up an early score, but then settles in. You know, play solid defense. Jarvion Franklin does the same. Corey Davis gets into the mix. And the Western offense is just too much for the Air Force defense to hold because of their balance. I think I predicted 31-17. But what will probably happen is Western is 0-5 in bowl games all time, including a painstaking loss at the Pizza Bowl in their last appearance in 2011, which they turned the ball over six times in their home state. So I don't know. I can almost see Jarvion fumbling twice, which would, I don't know. I'd almost have to wear a Central shirt and sing their fight song if that were to happen, because he rarely fumbles. But it'll probably be one of those games where you don't see something happen. Terrell will throw a couple picks and the Air Force will walk away with a close win because of turnovers. So my heart says 31-17 Western. My gut says something like 27-24 Air Force.
That's, I can see it either way, because Air Force hasn't blown anybody out too much this year.
Mm-hmm.
When they beat Boise State by two touchdowns, they forced seven turnovers and still a two-touchdown game.
Right. Damn. Wow.
So I don't see a blowout either way. One last question, though. Will Western Michigan keep the locker rooms appropriate after the game?
Oh. You know, I've heard this story, and I kind of put it out of my mind. But
just for fun, we'll wrap it up. So what do you think?
I think they will. Obviously, if you win and it's your first bowl win, all bets are off. But I think they'll definitely be on their best behavior. We haven't heard any incidents like that. And I also have to remember that win was our first win of the season a year after one win in 12 games all of last year. So
no, that's great. That's the reason to say. Party hard.
It was catharsis, Jeremy. Got to give him a break.
Excellent. No, I was just screwing around. I don't care. It's Boise State. It's neither team's locker room. It's not Air Force's. They don't care.
So, oh, well, the Broncos.
maybe those some.
Our region. House.
They are. So, Matt, do you have anything else to add about the Potato Bowl?
No. I mean, I think it's going to be a fun game.
There we go. Perfect. We'll discuss our predictions later, but Brandon, thank you for joining us. Check us out check him out, hustlebelt.com. And what's your Twitter as well? Because I did not look it up before we started.
You can either follow at hustlebelt, which is the general blog, or you can follow me at BroncoFitz, FITZ.
Do that, folks. I assume we have to ask this question to everybody. I know it's a far game, but I assume you're not going to be on the blue turf in Boise. You'll be in the comfort of a warm home.
Yeah, we'll see how much comfort there is. but yeah, I unfortunately can't make the trip to Boise. Work has to keep me.
Well, yeah, work and money. It's not like it's a close drive. Like I could go to Vegas in a couple hours. So
yeah,
not one of those things.
It'd be a fun road trip, but unfortunately I can't make it.
Understandable. Some of us are attempting to go to the Fiesta Bowl, but that's probably not going to happen either. So, but
I don't know.
We'll see. But Brandon, thanks.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll let you get out of here then, and I will wait patiently and twiddle my thumbs until Jeremy gets back. I'm assuming we'll probably talk about predictions. So I'll go ahead and stall for about a minute till Jeremy gets back. Mm-hmm. Do you have predictions against the spread for the Colorado State Utah game? Right now, it looks like the Rams are getting 4 against the Utes.
Oh, I don't know. Something tells me Utah's got it in them. I haven't seen Colorado State play too much this year. I did see the Colorado game. I think I'm gonna go with the Utes there. Unfortunately,
yeah,
I know.
No, it's fine. No, I'm back. I didn't ask anything important, so I was just gonna say thanks for joining us and I died out. I love my computer problems the past two shows, past 2 days, but
so do we.
I figured I changed computers. I probably should use Google product, but whatever. So really quick, I have one last thing for you then. So what do you think? What was I going to say? Yeah. You guys, I don't know who it was, but NIU to the Big 12, are you thumbs up or thumbs down that could ever happen?
Their basketball program tells me no, but football is big money. I don't know. Obviously, the Big 10 took Nebraska in.
So
yeah, you got that basketball. What do they know?
Oh God, that basketball team's awful. I don't know if the Big Ten really gets.
If they want Chicago, they should get NIU, right?
If they want Chicago, they'll go after NIU. So I could possibly see it. If it doesn't happen in the next 10 years, though, the Big Ten or the Big 12 is dead. So, yeah. I see the MAC making a big push. NIU fans, they're so cocky.
That's what I can tell from reading that piece. Like, they've been discussing this for a while, at least a slim long shot.
Yeah, NIU's discussing the Big 12. Buffalo's discussing the American. It's all hunky-dory here in the MAC.
It'll be all good. But once again, thanks for hopping on with us. Thanks for saving me the last minute or two when my computer dies. But check out Hustle Belt. He'll be tweeting the game, I'm assuming, and more coverage there that we probably don't know about with Western Michigan will be residing at HustleBelt.com. So check that out, folks. And, hey, thanks for joining us for this late evening, Brandon. And we'll good luck this weekend, okay, man?
Thank you. Good luck to you guys as well.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later. See ya.
See ya.
I survived another dropout kind of, right?
Survived in advance. That's what it's all about.
I don't know what the deal is. It's ridiculous. But, hey, thanks for – at least I should have warned you before the show this could happen. But
well, you know, it's funny that you bring up the Big 12 thing because, you know, the local columnist in the Fresno Bee had to come out and write a column last weekend. Because apparently there's been rumblings that Fresno State might get a look from the Big 12 as well. And so he basically had to come out, and the whole point of the article was to just say it's never going to happen.
That's a good reason. That's a reasonable thing to say.
So I characterized by a local reader as a colossal waste of time.
He had to meet his quota for articles that week.
I guess so.
Plus, Pete, no, obviously expansion, click, click, click. Everybody go check it out, so that's the reason. Yeah, Big 12 is also the Colorado State. Big 12 talk a little bit because the new stadium is going forward and they've been playing well. But it's if the Big 12 is doing anything, it's going to be either a combination of Cincinnati, Memphis, BYU, maybe Houston, maybe Boise State, and then Colorado State's probably in that last spot, I think, along with NIU.
It's going to be a weird-looking Big 12.
If there's a Big 12, like Brandon said, in a decade.
Yeah.
So let's get back to what you and me discussing really quick, this two games. So let's go back all the way to the beginning, assuming they don't drop out. Colorado State, Utah. We already discussed it with Shane. So if you didn't listen to that part, you're here. Rewind, I guess. I don't know how you got here if that happened. But what are your thoughts? Like, well, let's give a prediction really quick so we can both kind of keep track of that stuff.
Okay. So I was just actually talking to Brandon about that when you dropped out. Colorado State is getting 4 against the Utes.
Not bad.
So what do you think?
Here's the thing. I've seen Utah enough to know I don't trust the quarterback one bit to throw the ball to Travis Wilson. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked our guy Shane earlier. They just could give it to Booker 35 times. I want to say the Rams win, but it's going to be a close game regardless. I'll be a homer pick and go with the Rams just because I think I don't care if they put Eric Rowe or Brackett, Rashard Higgins. He'll get the – Grayson will find a way to get him the ball because Coach Baldwin's the interim head coach. That's a little bit of a change. But he's been running the offense, running the plays. Offense will be fine. And assuming they can limit Nate Orchard or Lotu Lele or whoever is up front, D. Hart has to do something. Give only 70 yards I would be fine with. But I think the offense will be is more balanced in Utah's, and that's where I think – they'll make the difference and win the game because if Colorado State can limit Booker to like 3 yards a carry, 4 yards a carry, because I heard that stat where they need to wrap up a tackle, he'll get all the yards after the first hit. Mm-hmm. I still think the Rams can pull it out, but it'll be some sort of close game, like a one possession game, because I think Higgins will have a big day, especially if he's getting single coverage. They're not going to stop him.
Okay, apparently I made a mistake. The line opened at 4. Right now it's at 3. Colorado State.
Whatever, 3-4. I'll still same thing. I'll still go with Rams. What about you? How do you see it maybe playing out? Rams win, or what's your kind of prognostication of the game? Prognostication, is that the right word?
Prognostication.
There we go.
I think honestly, it's going to be a little bit of a rock fight because I think that I think that Utah front four is going to do some damage, like it or not. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it were like last year's Las Vegas Bowl, where, you know, Colorado State looks explosive against a lot of fairly decent, you know, Mountain West teams. But coming up against that front four, you know, Orchard and Hunter Dimmick?
Hunter Dimmick, yeah.
Yeah. You know, those guys, I think those guys are going to wreak some havoc. I think they're going to have a hard time getting things going. And I'm going to take Utah in a close one. I'm going to say 21-17.
I see your point, because I'm thinking about, because you're there, Fresno's offense was much better than what Rams have with so many guys in the NFL. But if I recall, USC was projected pretty high last year. Like, they got ended up with 10 wins. And weren't they in the top 10 at some point last year? So maybe I'm completely wrong, but I could see it too. But I'm thinking, I don't know, because Fresno had Austin Wentworth, but he's center. That doesn't really – is not going to stop too many blitzes or sacks. But left tackle the Rams have, there could be – I get your point. It's going to be – I think it's going to be a tough go, but, dude, just chuck it to Higgins, and I'll just go with that, the simple way. And also, Utah fans, anybody, you shouldn't trust Travis Wilson to throw the ball. So if the Rams can make it be 3rd and 6 and longer a lot of times – then they'll be golden, because, like I said, I've seen Wilson play enough, being a Utah guy. He's not consistent enough throwing the ball. So I think you're right. Close game. I'll pick Rams. You'll pick Utes. We'll go from there. So
and so it looks like we'll take what's the score going to be?
Oh, my score? Think it won't be many points, because I kind of also, really quick to backtrack, we saw Boise State versus CSU, and Boise State pretty much dominated them for 3/4 of the game in that throwing game, but Utah doesn't throw it. So, but I would say 21-17, something along those lines. There won't be a ton of points, because Utah's defense is too good, and and special teams could be a difference for if Utah is going to win. But about 21-17 is my prediction for the Rams. They will get a couple touchdowns, and Utah will get stalled somewhere along the line.
All right, so it looks like we're both taking the under as well.
What is the over under on this game?
57.5.
That seems too much, man. That means about 28, 25 or something like that.
Yeah, and, you know, looks like, according to oddsshark.com, the total, it's gone under. Utah's gone under 8 of the last 10 games. But for Colorado State, it's gone over in 4 of the last 5. So, you know, flip a coin.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, this stuff can always play an effect. But let's go to the next game. Western Michigan, Air Force. I didn't want to say your brand is on, but I think Air Force, even without Jacoby Owens, is probably going to win pretty handily, I think.
And Western Michigan right now is getting 1 point.
1 point. These blowouts are just, let's flip a coin or roll our 12-sided dice and see what we come up with, right?
Yeah, well, it actually opened Air Force +3, so the line swung 4 points since it opened.
I like what they're doing there, and their offense can probably move the ball pretty well. But I think even – because you got Kel Pearson back, which is a big deal, but no Jacoby Owens hurts. But this Air Force team this year is not like it has been the past year or two, where they only had one runner, and once he was gone, like when they had Anthony Lacoste last year, that's all they had. But with Dave having multiple guys and Pearson with the throwing ability, I see it'd be like 30-20 in favor of Air Force. And if Steelhammer can make a play in defense, I just think Air Force is playing pretty well of late, and they can throw whoever – they have enough backs in the backfield to replace what Owens was doing.
I honestly don't feel great about the matchup for Air Force, if only because I think Western Michigan's passing attack is going to make a huge difference in this game. And they've, you know, this secondary has been gashed before. You know, Georgia State, of all teams, threw for 414 yards. That was the week before they upended Boise. You know, even Boise racked up 370 yards. Colorado State managed 366 yards. They weren't terribly efficient while they did that. But I think there's an outside chance that this offense is the best one that the Falcons have faced all year. So I think it's going to be a track meet. I think it's definitely going to go over. The over-under on this one is also 57.5.
Yeah. Okay, I can buy that maybe because I do see Western Michigan Broncos can't score. So maybe I need to up my projection.
I'm going to say Western Michigan 38, Air Force 34.
Okay. And I think apparently my connection's bad, but
no, I will take my plus one, and I will take Western Michigan.
Plus one. Jeez, really? Plus one. All right, so one last real quick thing. So we got four Mountain West Bowl games the first day. If you're forced to watch one game, or that was the only time you had, which game would you be watching?
Oh, you know what? I would definitely take this Potato Bowl game. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of offense, which I think a lot of fans are going to really enjoy.
Okay, that's a possibility. I might go with Louisiana Lafayette, Nevada, because I think there could be a lot of points in that game. Because it actually has a higher over-under, 61. Utah State UTEP will probably be a low-scoring game just because of what Utah State's defense, but I would go with the early morning breakfast in Nevada Lafayette, which is 10 a.m. local time kickoff.
Oh, wow.
10 a.m. in New Orleans. That's so early. That, I don't know what they're doing, but I would go, if I don't predict the order, I'd probably go Nevada. I like Utah State, Colorado State a bit better too than Air Force, Western Michigan, just if I had to kind of pick, but who am I to say what game you want to watch? I don't care. It's your choice against mine.
All right, so here's my watchability power rankings for that first day. It's in reverse order of games that are as they show up on TV. I'm going to put Western Michigan Air Force at the top. Number two is definitely Utah, Colorado State. And then the New Mexico Bowl, UTEP and Utah State. And then I put, Nevada and Louisiana Lafayette last.
Why do you put Lafayette, Nevada last?
One, I'm not a huge fan of Nevada.
Of course.
Nevada just, I don't know, it just doesn't really excite me. The Sun Belt doesn't really excite me all that much. If it were Georgia Southern, that might be another story.
Of course. I go with that because
these are the false Sun Belt champs that we're talking about here.
Of course. I just like there's the unpredictability factor, Nevada scoring 60 points in 2 minutes. So that's what I want to see, because we saw Boise State, CSU, they put up all those points, and that's kind of why I think that might be higher, because it's either boom or bust, I think, with Nevada, and I'm going with boom for that first game, which could be a mistake of mine if I want to use my morning time to watch that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the early kickoff, there's a fairly high chance there's going to be a little bit of sloppy football going on that early.
Yeah, it's 8 a.m. Pacific time, essentially. Jeez, that's early. But so, okay. Do you have anything else to add we need to discuss? Do you want to have any thoughts about the playoff? Anything else you want to discuss? We can talk about your Fresno team for a second if you want. They're heading out to the island, and hopefully it's not a repeat showing versus SMU a couple years ago.
You know what? Honestly, I don't know what to expect from this game, because it seems like both of the teams involved are kind of pedestrian.
By playing Rice, yeah.
Like, Rice does a lot of things okay, but they don't do like one thing well. And going up against a Fresno State team that hasn't been terribly efficient on either side of the ball kind of leaves it a whole, just a big mystery to me as far as I'm concerned.
There's also the factor Rice just gave up 76 points to La Tech in their last game.
Yeah.
76 points.
That one got away from them. Maybe.
And so I'm assuming I would take the bet, because right now I'm on their ESPN page. They're 91st in points against at just over 30. I'm betting they were probably about middle of the pack before that game, because that 76 probably upped it by 8 to 10 points.
It might be, yeah.
That's, I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, we may have you. We'll probably have you on again to talk Fresno Rice in Hawaii. We'll see. We're doing some shows. Kind of, here's our plan. We're doing it since for us, it's a normal Saturday weekend, because we always have 4 to 6 games going on. But we got all the bowls. So we'll probably do a recap on Sunday. We'll probably, if you're free, me and Chris will probably have you on again to talk about this bowl game, to preview it on Sunday. So we'll make sure to check our feed on SoundCloud, iTunes. We'll probably have about 4 or 5 shows in about a week period. So that's not a mistake. That's not me accidentally publishing stuff to the podcast feed. So
We're giving people what they want. We're stocking their iPods and their
Of course. Yeah, you got the travel coming up. You got, if you're heading anywhere for, like, people are out of school, they're traveling, flying back. We got at least two shows to get going up. You can go back and listen to see how terrible Chris and I or you and me were for this show and our predictions, and then follow up on the recap over the weekend. So
if you want to get away from your family for an hour at a time, we're giving you a few excuses to do it.
And hopefully my dropping out hasn't messed up too many people on this, but thank you for filling in essentially last minute for this tonight. So thank you for Matt joining us tonight. Again, check us out, MWCConnection.com, Mountain Oaks Connection on Facebook, Twitter, MWC Connection, all that fun stuff. Stop by the site, yell at us, tweet at us, give us comments. Join the open thread this week, and it'll be great. And everyone, have a great week after the first weekend.